This is an Enterprise Times podcast. I'm talking to Fred Studer.
Hello.
CMO of Financial Force. Fred, you've just joined Financial Force a few months ago. What is the biggest challenges for a CMO nowadays, and especially at Financial Force, you finding?
It's a good question, and I think a lot of CMOs are really struggling with how should they engage with customers in a more authentic way? Clearly, I think a lot of things that have happened across the board with regards to just a lot of access to information, but I think this notion of cloud computing and people everywhere trying to really think about going digital, it's taken on a really different point of view with regards to how people are trying to get to software decisions specifically. And so at least what I have been seeing in my last few roles, both at Microsoft, at NetSuite, and now at Financial Force, is that the customer is not just smart, but they've in some ways already come with their own decisions being made. And so as a marketer, you really have to engage in a very authentic and relevant way immediately if you want to support the decision that they've already made, hopefully for your software. But if not, providing them with some best practices and how they can actually learn, even if they might not have chosen you, how do you engage them in a community style so that you might have the ability to entice them and compel them with a value prop that might be interesting to them over time?
You kind of referenced this. So how has that the balance between inbound and outbound marketing changed over the last few years, in your opinion?
I think a lot of inbound is really hard to rationalize these days because customers are coming in, let's call them prospects, and not just prospects, but a lot of different people within an organization. They might be buyers, they might be part of the decision cycle, they might be users. And so inbound really needs to go through a much more sophisticated filtering process. And so at least what we've done is when we know our target and we know where we actually hunt and have a best story and solution for, our outbound is much more significantly valuable than just spending too much time on inbound. Now, that doesn't mean that inbound isn't absolutely important, because when people come to our website or come to our events, there's absolutely an engagement, but we're very deliberate about how we evaluate those types of people that come in. Our outbound processes and strategy has become much more strategic. And in fact, to be candid, what we're seeing, at least from a conversion perspective, the holy grail of what marketing looks for, if we can find qualified conversions and get those into the hands of our sellers and partners, those are really the keys to the kingdom. And so our outbound processes have gotten really sophisticated from a segmentation perspective, from an engagement perspective, and specifically from a content point of view. And we're very happy with those results so far.
So what is the biggest marketing opportunity at the moment?
Well, I think the biggest marketing opportunity has always been the biggest market opportunity, which is defining your segment very specifically. Because if you can do that and really be truthful both internally about where your solution best plays, and then cutting out all of the complexities and noise about what that true market segment is, then you can be very honest, relevant, and authentic to that audience. And in fact, in that communication plan, whether it's marketing, sales, or just them being joined, I think a successful marketing plan really starts with a true and honest segmentation of exactly the audience, not just the type of company, but the type of company, the size of company, the region, and the problems that those companies might have that you uniquely solve, and then finding and identifying the actual role and the person that you want to communicate with, and then finding really great ways to compel them to want to listen to that story.
So you say that communication's been two-way. What are you hearing from your customers about the biggest challenges they're facing at the moment?
There's really three, and we're talking to businesses. So let's be clear, we're talking to enterprises anywhere from 1,000 employees up to 10,000 employees. And what we're hearing across the board, the number one thing that all companies are worried about is how do they grow? And not just how do they grow, but how do they grow profitably? And we can go into that in a little bit more detail, but growth is absolutely a key endeavor. The second one is how do they get the most productivity about with their assets, both dollars and how they invest in these growth strategies, but also of their people. So how do they onboard people? Every single CIO and CFO and CEO are trying to go to the cloud because they know that those technologies are the easiest ones for them to adopt, but they want to make sure that they're providing their company both with the right investment strategy, but also with the right productivity tools. And that's not just Microsoft Office and Slack. That's every single tool that a seller, marketer, even a finance person would use to be able to drive growth for that company. And then the third, obviously, is doing that in a very safe and fiscally responsible, but also a risk-free methodology. So cybersecurity, all of the things that they use to mitigate risk are probably those top three. So growth, resource productivity, and then being secure and mitigating risk.
You've been here several months at Financial Force, got an ear for the data, obviously, and you're talking about your segmentation of 1,000 to 10,000. Have you come up with any surprises in the data that you've drawn in so far?
Absolutely. And looking at data, you know this because we've talked a lot about it, but you can make the data support anything that you'd really like. And so one of the things that we've really tried to do is rationalize the data, not for what we want it to say, but what is it really saying? And so there's a couple of surprises. We do very well in the mid-market with some great products, and specifically here in Europe. Here we are sitting in downtown London at our new office called WeWork. And you think about just how the world has changed with regards to these offices being here. But one of the things that our data said is that we need to be where our prospects are going to be. And so one of the reasons that we opened up this office is that people wanted to be able to come and have, even though the internet has changed everything and people like to do their research, they still do want to come to an office and they want to come to a place where they can actually meet and experience other customers. And so one of our data sets really shows that our best engagement strategies are where we can most quickly engage a prospect with an existing customer and how we actually talk through them listening to a story that is similar to theirs and have it be really very quantifiable and business driven. The second thing that our data is showing is that when we are true to our role and our value prop within a segment, and we're doing very well in something that we call the service-based businesses, and that's not just businesses that have big consulting practices, but businesses that are really thinking about utility sales models, adaptive new business models, when we are really delivering on that segment and not completely forgetting about everybody else, but at least focusing our primary message and story to those markets, we do really well. And then the third that I think was an interesting thing that came out of our data is that customers came into the funnel at various different stages. I think the old school marketers would have thought, let's follow this funnel. We're going to put people in a funnel. The reality is that nobody really wants to be in a funnel. So we've decided that it is a non-linear approach. So how do we adapt our entire go-to-market, both from a marketing and sales perspective, to engage a customer in a much more organic, customer-centric way with all of our communications? And that means everything from when a customer would come to financialforce.com to how we would engage them with our events that we would have around the world. And the data shows that when we're able to adapt our engagement strategy to the place that our customers really want to be or our prospects, we're much more successful at communicating our value prop. And that engagement strategy is much more both productive from our side, but it's really much more appreciated from our customer side, because then it really isn't marketing. It's engaging in the process that they really wanted to get involved in anyway.
There's an interesting thing where does brand lead culture or does culture lead brand? Clearly, by getting people into your offices, you're demonstrating your culture. And how are you managing to keep that tie with that culture and brand together going forward as you grow rapidly?
It's a good question, because you think, does the brand come first or does the customer really create the brand? And I think we know now that our brand is about what our current customers think about us as much as what our prospects really believe that journey of a brand promise really is based on those customers that they've met with. And so bringing people into our offices, bringing people to our events, and you were at the event that we had in May here in London. One of the most successful things that we had that came through in a lot of the data was a lot of when our current customers would speak on behalf of Financial Force, not just about Financial Force, but about how they were driving innovation, how they were driving growth strategies, how they were becoming more productive. And it was just implicit that they were using Financial Force among other of the ecosystem players. But it wasn't an advertisement as much as it was sharing authentic customer stories with our prospects and having that networking and that community effect really drive it. And so when I think about one of the most successful things that we want to continue to aspire to deliver, it's about bringing people into a community that they're learning, they're constantly innovating together, and that they know that they're with other prospects and customers that are like them, and they continue to evolve in that world. And so as a marketer, I have to think that my brand is about how I'm delivering on a consistent value prop and solving real customer pain points in a community that feels and knows that they can be successful with Financial Force. And so everything that I can do to really bring out and share real customer stories of quantifiable business benefits, that really is the brand promise that we want to continue to deliver on.
You're very much an advocate of customer advocacy, no pun intended. There's a lot of academic thinking, and you read in HBR about data-driven decision-making. Is marketing moving away from the science and towards the art nowadays, or is it a blend of both? By letting your customers stand on stage, you're never quite sure what they say.
And you have to be ready for that, because really, it's about, and I keep using the word authenticity, marketing got away from it, because we've been enabled to create these fantasies of things that we thought customers would be compelled by. But in reality, at least over the last 3 to 5 years in my career, the only thing that matters is what your customers really say. And so you asked a really important question, the science versus the art of marketing. Early on, it was really the art. It was the Mad Men style. Let's put up something that just creates some compelling need that a customer might or might not really want, but the advertising is so compelling that they feel obligated to be participant in it. Then I think we moved way too far with the 3,000 different technologies that a marketer has access to. I can't even keep track of it. You became a CIO in the marketing world, and I became a bane of my existence, both from a technology adoption perspective within our IT organization. And so I think there's a bit of a balance that's happening, at least in my organization. It's like, let's choose the right tools that help us uniquely get our compelling value prop, and not this fantasy, but a real journey that our customers can get on in the best way. So how do we optimize for the website? How do we optimize for content generation? How do we optimize for our current customers providing advocacy? As you know, I'm a big fan of that. How do we get them involved in this community of sharing their own stories while we still blend the art of really telling the story in a way not that misleads? Because I think that marketing used to be, how good could you tell a story that you thought your customer wanted to hear? And now it's, how well do you articulate the truth of how your product delivers on value in a way that your customers want to hear it? So for me, that's the art of getting local. How do I tell the message to a CFO versus a CIO versus a CEO? How do I tell that story in North America versus Europe? How do I tell that story to a segment or an industry in a way that is the most way to tell that story in that language? And that really is the blending of art and science. And I got to say, it's a really exciting time to think about it as a marketer.
You've mentioned how the role of CMO has changed and has changed over the last 3 to 5 years, especially. How do you see it evolving in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I happen to be in a very wonderful spot. I work for my long-term mentor and now friend and colleague and now my CEO, Todd Nielsen. And so kind of grew up in the ranks, he being one of the best platform marketers and me really aspiring to be one of the best business-to-business applications marketers. And what we found in knowing each other over the last 15-plus years and now me working for him for the last 6 months, I've really realized that, and he's really given me the ability to do this, that if you are a really good marketer, even above, in some cases, just individual sellers, you get to see the scale and appreciation of a value prop that you are delivering across a big market. And not just thinking about how to scale that message, but really understanding that as a strategy. A really good marketing team now is going to be strategic, not just in how you think about the communication strategy for the company and the go-to-market, but how do you think about looking at where your customers are going to go in the future so that you can drive product strategy. I partner very closely with our head of product. I partner very closely with our head of ecosystem and partners, because as a marketer, I am at scale being able to see and think about where the market is going. And in fact, even working with people like you, this source right now, at least for me, of looking at all of the different aspects of reading HBR, listening to you about what you're researching, talking to our customers, talking to partners, talking to investors, I have a really good point of view as a marketer to say, this is the strategy and the vision for the company. And I think knowing that side of business, it's not just art, but really being a little bit more scientific. And a lot of the things that I learned working at Microsoft, because you have to have a good business acumen, it puts the new marketer in a really good position to be a key advisor to the CEO and really to the board of directors around how a company should approach the best growth strategy.
You mentioned tools and techniques. What's your favorite tool at the moment that you're using?
I have two favorite tools. One is a brand new tool called Influitive. Influitive is, you can think of it as a really amazing customer-focused advocacy program. It essentially kind of gamifies, but in a really wonderful engagement strategy, your customers into helping you as a company, so us as Financial Force, how could they help us better tell their story? So by organizing their content, organizing their storylines, and putting them into a more of a programmatic approach about how we can help them with service, with education, with deployment of new technologies, with them being part of our customer advisory boards, with speaking at our events, they're able to think through a very, let's say, visual and visible way that they can engage with Financial Force, both for their benefit, but also they can see when they do speak at one of our events or become a reference or help us with a case study, how that value is really supporting their future value by both giving us best practices, but they're also able to really get better engaged with, if they do have a product problem, they have direct connection. And because we're engaged and we have this new connection, it's basically a very collaborative tool to help our customers, both new and existing customers, better engage with Financial Force to have a better understanding of how they can be useful to us, but also how they can engage with us in a different way, and we can actually provide them with even better care. So Influitive is one of my new favorites. The other one is really around some of the marketing analytics that we use. So we use Einstein Analytics. Although we have a lot of tools, Lean Data, Marketo, Infer, we use a lot of tools. They discreetly do some great things, but marketing is so fragmented, we needed to be able to see the full view. And so we use Einstein Analytics, and essentially it's providing us with great insight, not just about how our marketing is done, but getting predictive about what if scenarios and where would we spend the most dollars, and even doing simulations about if we were to run a campaign, how do we think it would actually play out? And it's also helped my team think differently about how they own, and everybody in the company should, pipeline. Because when we really look at it, marketers would think about, well, we own responses. Well, we own event attendees. We own how many customer references have. But really, when you start to abstract it and get beyond just the individual tools, and you start to think about what marketing is truly trying to do, we are all about creating authentic pipeline for our field. And if we do that in the best way, we create a very sustainable model both for our sellers, for our investors, and for the customers, because they get the benefit of having that investment go into future product development.
We've talked about Financial Force as a name and whether it's a good name, whether it's a bad name. Is it too tied to Financial for Salesforce or not? How are you trying to create a separate entity in terms of this is Financial Force in its own right as a strong brand, because it is a recognized brand, but as a strong brand, in a sense, independent of Salesforce, which you are almost?
You and I have spoken a lot about this, and I've thought a lot about it. The name itself, it does have great resonance in the market that we're in, and you and I have talked about what would it look like to change it, and I've thought about it over the last 3 months since we first met. I really feel that there is obviously great advantage to being tied to Salesforce. Like, honestly, being the number one cloud ERP on the Salesforce platform is an amazing strength and an amazing asset. For companies that really choose to go with Salesforce, who is the leading CRM provider, for them to think about how to extend that value, not into a separate ERP, but into a company that, like Financial Force, is helping them with growth strategies in what would be classically known as a back office, but if you really think about it, we're the end-to-end with Salesforce, and that's how they're really thinking about us as well. But we also do have to have discrete value to companies that might not want to choose or haven't chosen Salesforce. And so for that, you know, to your point, and we took some of your suggestions, how do we really become the, let's call it financial cloud, or let's just say it in a different way, we're kind of a modern ERP. And so one of the reasons that we've looked at some of the best practices beyond even just Salesforce is that we think that there's a great opportunity for a modern cloud ERP. And just in saying that, that means that there are legacy cloud ERPs. We know who all of them are, but we built our ERP, regardless of whether we built it on Salesforce or not, we built it for growth. We didn't build it for cost management. There's a lot of ERPs that do that. It doesn't mean that we don't, but we're not advocating just ripping out and replacing SAP or Oracle or really any of those legacy providers. But we do think that there's an opportunity for a company that is, we're 9 years old now, we built for a growth strategy model that happened to be thinking about customer centricity on Salesforce, and we think that there's a really unique play. Now, we know that we can't just be the company that just says we're on Salesforce. What we're doing, to my whole love of customer advocacy, is that we're proving that through case studies of ROI. Now, a lot of them are stronger when you're on Salesforce, and we'll prove what that wall-to-wall looks like with Salesforce. We have a lot of customers that actually are not using Salesforce, but choose us either for our great mid-market ERP strategy, mostly financials, billing, rev rec, etc. But there's also a lot of large enterprises that have chosen us that are using that to modernize and drive growth and better margins with our professional services automation software as well. So we've got a great strategy, I think, on Salesforce, and it's one that we will embrace and continue to work very closely with their customers. But we also know that we do have to have a discrete value. And so again, I think that comes back to one of your first questions, which is the art and science of segmentation. And then how do you uniquely communicate that to those audiences? And so that's really one of the opportunities for my team, and we're really working very quickly and hard to ensure that. Now, obviously, we've got Dreamforce coming up in November, and so you'll clearly be seeing a lot of how we're using a lot of their technologies to drive the blurring between front office and back office, and we'll continue to tell that story because that audience is really one that I think we have a great story around. But make no mistake, we'll also be clearly communicating our benefits to all potential prospects, whether they're on Salesforce or not.
You mentioned there about legacy cloud vendors, and I think we're probably at the point now, in my belief anyway, where we're at the tipping point of ERP, where if a CIO goes out and says, I'm going to buy a new ERP system, they're going to buy a cloud ERP system. The next step is actually, is there a tipping point for first generation cloud ERP systems being replaced? Where do you see that? Are we left with laggards on premise that actually aren't going to be moving anymore, and actually the market for first generation is almost creeping up to be equal to the market for legacy ERP solutions? Or where do we stand on that at the moment?
I completely concur with your statement that we have hit a tipping point, and I think you can make the analogy that when we had the smartphone, people didn't go to a slightly smarter phone and then wait for the smartphone and then wait for the smarter phone. I think people are jumping technologies. And so I completely agree that there is a market phenomenon happening right now, specifically in ERP, where there's a ton of companies that have been on the classic legacy on-prem SAP, Oracle, and even some to a certain degree Microsoft, had probably thought about moving to the now legacy cloud ERPs like a NetSuite or let's just say a Sage or Intacct. And now what they're thinking about is, well, if we're going to make a change, because we all know that switching out an ERP is no trivial thing. But I think the modern cloud companies and the ones that are thinking about growth are not just looking at ERP. I think that's the wrong way to look at it. Even though we're in that category and we do have solutions that do those things, we're not just thinking about how to deliver for what the category used to say it was for. We've created a new definition of ERP. It would be like comparing Financial Force ERP, cloud ERP, to a car analogy. It would be like comparing a Tesla to a horse and carriage. They both got you to places, but one does it in a very different way and is thinking about not just driving a car, but it's a complete transportation experience. One, in some cases, that you don't even have to actually drive. So when we think about what we've done to modernize that, I think we work with a lot of people like you to think differently about what the new ERP looks like. It's a term that will be around forever. But what it is today is definitely different than what it was even 10 years ago. It is clearly different than what it was in 1998 when companies like NetSuite came onto the market. The platform, the focus, it was much more focused on cost than revenue. It was much more focused on keeping the same processes than having an organic process. And it was much more consistent around your order than your opportunity and your customer. And so I think there's a really great opportunity that we have. And clearly, our growth and everything that we're doing around winning in the market and switching a lot of companies from even NetSuite. We've switched in the last 2 years over 100 customers from NetSuite, both OpenAir and other technologies there, because I think companies really want to see a strategy that helps them have the ability to have agility in their business models, to optimize time and talent, to be able to have predictive insights from one single platform. And whether they're on Salesforce or not, they see that that customer centricity and focus on that growth is really one of the key drivers that they need in their business. Now, I'm not saying that everybody that's using Oracle or SAP or even NetSuite are thinking about switching, but I think in every single case, they're probably not happy with what they have because it's not getting them to the strategies that we just talked about earlier in this conversation.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve. It's always great to talk with you.